a show is this?
It's educational and offers mild thrills.
It's Peter Tilden.
At 10!
Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10, begins right now. Brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep. He'll, of course, beat anyone's advertised price, or your mattress is free. We've got some great tickets for you today to see Lady Antebellum and Darius Rucker in concert, Rodney Carrington, and other stuff. We're going to do the quiz next hour for those prizes. We've got a great guest next hour. You're going to have to stay tuned to see who it is. We're waiting for the president to actually speak, and we'll go to that live because at first we heard he was going to sign the omnibus bill. You had McConnell and Ryan had convinced him, yes, we're moving forward on this, and it was going to be a done deal. Then we heard he's going to veto the omnibus bill, which freaked everybody out this morning. They don't know why he changed his mind. They thought it had a done deal. And now it looks like a poo-poo platter or combo platter. He's going to maybe sign the spending bill despite the veto threat, but I'm sure he's going to have words to say about it because he's not happy about DACA, and he's not happy about spending for the wall. And there is so much pork in this bill. Remember, I had Jack Abramoff on yesterday, the lobbyist who went to jail, and we asked Jack, how much pork is in there? And he just started laughing because everybody who's thrown in and signs his bill got something. So it's like handing out cookies to kids. Here you go. You want this? You're going to sign the bill? Boom, boom, boom. So a lot of pork in there. As a side note, Rabbi yesterday said meat from a cloned pig could be kosher for Jews to eat. That's just another pork story. I'll tell you more about that later. Because somehow a cloned pig is not pig. We'll get into that later. And I'll let you know what's in the omnibus bill, who the winners and losers are after the president speaks. But lots of other stuff I want to talk about first. And I'd like your input on this. Phone number is 800-222-5222. You know, the March for Our Lives is happening this weekend, and that's that big march that the catalyst for that was when a gunman killed 14 students and three staff at that Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. And they're trying to rally and get legislation changed to make schools safer. We've talked about it, and I've talked about it forever on this radio show. I've been here a long, long time. And when I hear let's arm teachers, my immediate response was, that's crazy. That's crazy. And I echo all the things we've heard, which is, you don't know who's armed when the guy comes into the school, when the police show up. They don't know if it's a teacher, good guy, bad guy. Schools are more dangerous with more guns. This is an NRA ploy. And then I read a piece by a school superintendent, and it changed my mind about arming teachers. And I'd love your input, too, especially if you're listening to my voice right now, and you immediately feel we should not arm teachers. Definitely should not arm teachers. It's a bad idea. It's going to hurt more people. It makes the schools more dangerous. So this guy is a superintendent at a school district. And he heard about a shooting in an Amish community at Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania school. Somebody walked into the one-room schoolhouse, took hostages, and in about half an hour shot and killed five children, wounded five others, and then killed himself. So the superintendent of the Harold Independent School District in Texas said, we wanted to do something about that. We wanted to allow certain faculty and staff to carry concealed weapons on school grounds during school hours. Because he said, my job is to protect these kids, and I'm going to try and figure out what I can do to do it. So after that shooting, he contacted the attorneys for his school to determine if what he's calling his guardian plan would be legal on state and federal levels. And what this program would be, the school board would individually approve school employees who already held state concealed handgun licenses to participate in the program. And at that point, the district would provide them with extra additional training. They, in 2007, engaged a private consultant to develop additional training. And then he worked with the legislature in Texas to develop and pass a Senate Bill 1857. They created certification courses that could be utilized by other schools, and the Guardian program they thought would be launched. They were going to keep the names of the guardians confidential, and they would be paid a small yearly stipend in addition to their regular salaries to have them carry concealed handguns. So, again, teachers in the school who wanted to do this, who already carried and had a state concealed handgun license to participate in the program, are the ones who participated. They got extra training. And again, they would be anonymous, no one would know, and paid a small stipend. So the lawyers got back to them and said the plan was completely legal under federal and state law. And they figured they're going to enact it at that time. But the school board didn't pass it because they were really reluctant to move forward because of the optics. They didn't say that the plan didn't have merits. But the big concern was that outside of the community, it would be construed too far outside of the box, having armed teachers in the school. And then the Virginia Tech shooting happened, wounded 17 and killed 33. So at that point, they decided, yes, we are going to put this in effect at the school. He says that the anonymity of the teachers in the program is the key, because no one in the general public knows the identity of the team members. They don't release their numbers. But at all times, there's an armed school employee or employees on site. His attitude was this: I don't necessarily want to have to do this. I don't like that I have to even look at this. I don't love the fact that we have these school shootings continuously and I have to change how we're doing stuff. But his attitude was, you know, you got a school, even a small one like ours, there are different silos, different hallways, et cetera, in the schoolway. And even if you have an armed security officer who's at one location, if a shooter enters in another location, he can do so much damage and seconds matter. So this way, they let it be known that this was an armed school so that a shooter would not know where the retaliation would come from or the resistance would come from, which is a common element of most mass shootings, surprise. So they would have the element of surprise. Hard targets like federal buildings already have security guards or sheriff's deputies or some kind of similarly armed individuals that are regularly employed. Schools, lots of schools have that, but only in limited numbers because of the cost. So what he's saying is, this isn't so nuts. The Guardian plan just grafts a modest stipend onto a current employee, giving the school district not only quality protection, but also the financial flexibility to have multiple guards so that if a shooter comes into school, you at least have other opportunities to stop him. He calls it a force multiplier. The buildings, he said, have their own gun silencing and incident silencing effect. You're shooting down one hallway. You don't necessarily even know where the shooter is. And a resource officer could be in the wrong place at the wrong time, costing you really, really valuable seconds. So people who oppose the plan, and I get it. I recoiled at first as soon as I heard it. I keep hearing more teachers with guns. More guns is a bad thing. But the opposition, and I get it, concealed firearms, a lot of people feel it makes it more dangerous. But he says, you know what? So far, so good. And he said, I know there's that incident where the teacher shot into the ceiling the other day, but there are other incidents, like one in Maryland, in which a school resource officer immediately confronted a shooter after two students were shot. And the response time is what he's interested in. The other pushback I always hear, too, is that the teachers have too much to do and aren't qualified to take on this additional type of duty. But he said, after working in education for 38 years, I'll be the first to say that not every school employee is cut out to carry a weapon or to act in a life and death emergency, but many are. And as the official ultimately tasked with protecting every student in the district, I wouldn't have done my job if I didn't go into those employees every possible resource for protecting the kids in their charge. So I started thinking about it. I thought, if you already have a teacher who wants to do this, they're improved, they carry concealed handguns already, they have to be licensed and trained, they have to get extra training continually, they have to pass certification courses, and they're willing to do it, and it costs a small stipend, why would you not put this program in the school? If precious time does mean something, when somebody enters a school, you're counting seconds before they can take somebody out. So I'm sitting here reading it. As I'm reading it, I'm going, you know what? He was concerned. He's coming from a good place. He did it in a legal way. He did it in a linear way that seems to make sense. And it would be like arming up and having extra security guards at your kid's school. Now, if you're hearing me talk about this and your initial response was like mine, more guns in schools is a dumb idea. It's a bad idea. Somebody's going to get hurt. After hearing this and hearing how he did it and how he went about it, Does it not make sense to you to have additional folks who are trained and willing to do it? And again, this is not going to work at every school. You're not going to have an outpouring of people who have concealed carry at every school and are willing to do it. But I think at a lot of schools, this could be part of a solution to a problem that's awful, that we don't want to have to address, but we do have to address it. And I'm shocked, actually, after I read it, that I changed my mind, that I thought this could be a doable thing, since I recalled every time I heard it in the past. Les in Gardena. Good morning. You're on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Yeah, how you doing, Peter? No, I totally disagree with this idea for the mere fact that the liability factor, if a teacher would shoot at a individual and the collateral damage would go for it, you would have the biggest lawsuit that a lot of these school districts couldn't afford to absorb. Also, when you're carrying deadly force, you see what happens with these police officers that shoot out of a proper protocol. It's a big, humongous lawsuit and right in trouble. Could you imagine a teacher whose sole principle is to teach and is diverted on that, and he starts shooting people and maybe shoot unjustifiably?
Oh, they're good points, but a school security officer, they have liability for that, and they have liability for this also, so that they would be protected. The other issue, as far as erroneous shooting, I'm sure absolutely that's a possibility. But in looking how he did this and how organized, and again, I hear you, and I was where you were, but I'm starting to move as I'm reading that a plan that could make sense with qualified teachers that can be there in time, so a shooter does not have 5 minutes to take out.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I was trained with weapons, you know, all sorts and all kinds. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what you're going to do until you're tested. You know what I'm saying? When
I
was in
you.
The military, not only did I have to worry about guns, I had to worry about grenades and people going psycho and Section 8 and all that other stuff. That was part of my job. But the whole thing about it is everybody ain't geared to be that way. And the liability factor will be horrendous. They had a teacher the other week, I think, dropped.
No, I know he. No, he didn't. He didn't drop his gun. He pointed at the ceiling to show that it was not loaded. Ended up shooting the ceiling. Look, there are going to be incidents, but the other part of it is, can we save lives?
What you do is you get safety officers, and you get 2 or 3. If that school down there in Florida would have had 2 or 3 officers, they probably would have been able to form a team and drop the guy.
The problem was they had one guy. Yeah, and here's the problem. The reality of being able to afford 2 or 3 officers, if you can supplement this way and have trained teachers who are certified, that's what you're doing. You're actually adding the equivalent of new officers because they can't afford it. Most schools can't afford it. I appreciate it. Let's go to Mike in Ontario. You're on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Good morning, Peter. It does make sense and it doesn't. The problem is that when you have a teacher roaming around looking for a gunman, now you got 2 guys with pistols and arriving police are going to be very confused. One thing is to stay in your class and protect your kids. A totally different thing is to roam around and to look for this gunman. Now you're in the open and God forbid you miss and you hit a kid because your background is all kids.
You know what I'd love to do in that situation, Mike and Joe, producer Joe? I'll give you the superintendent's information. I'd love to get him on because I'm sure he's thought about this. I'm sure he's that, because that's the first thing that comes up is when the police show up, how do they know who the good guy is? How do they know who the bad guy is?
So here's a thought, Peter. Now you say, okay, well, the good guy will wear a yellow vest. Well, word gets out, guess what? The gunman is going to wear a yellow vest.
Well, here's the deal. They don't know who these teachers are, but when the police get there, I'm sure that they're alerted to who has a gun and who doesn't have a gun. Really good questions. All he's doing is enhancing the security officer by getting the equivalent of more security officers. Yes, there are issues, but when I read about how much time it takes and how you can mow down kids, and if these guys are trained and licensed and it's legal and there's liability insurance, and you do let the police know when they show up who's trained and where they are, it's a potential. Patrick in Sun Valley. Good morning. You're on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Good morning. I got 2 points to make. One point is about the debt, and the second point is about teachers having guns. The debt, no matter who we pick, left or right, whatever, it's the same thing over and over. It's dirty laundry. And the laundry doesn't get cleaned. And what the solution would be to not vote at all because these voting machines are rigged.
Oh, wait a minute. I thought, you know what, you got me. Patrick, I got to be honest with you. I'm kind of have one eye on the fact that the president's going to speak any second. And I thought you were launching the gun issue. You're talking about voting about this? About the gun issue, is that what you're saying?
The voting has to do with the debt, because the machines are rigged, because we keep electing these people, they don't do anything, and then the teachers, they should not have guns because it's not their job.
Okay, but what if there's a teacher who is armed and is trained and is qualified and has to be certified and says, I want to be able to carry in case somebody comes in, I want to be there like a first responder so I can take somebody out in seconds instead of having to wait a minute and a half and watch my class mowed down.
There's no excuse for that. No, I don't agree with that.
Really? Because we can't
read a teacher's mind, you know what I'm saying? Because the teacher could be unstable, yeah, just like that, you know?
Understood.
And we don't know. Understood. We don't know. And I'm not going to put my kids... when I have kids, I don't have any kids, but when I have kids, I'm not going to put
myself in that. Wait a minute, let me think, wait, give me a second. I want to remember what that feels like, not having kids at a major. Okay, I'm over it now. you took me back to such a wonderful time there with no responsibility. But then the other thing is, if you had a teacher who you loved, who was certified and great and could save your kid, you would say to him, absolutely not, because I don't know, you may go off, you may go crazy.
Absolutely not. I don't trust the teachers, because look, if it's like that, then why don't we put a cop doing a barista at the police department? You know, it's not their job.
Well, okay, I hear Patrick. Patrick, I honor that. Number one, number two, call me back when you have kids, because I want to hear how different your life is. Take it easy. And Joe, let's get this guy on, because I'd love to ask the superintendent some of those questions. But I got to tell you, it seems to make sense if this guy is qualified and certified, takes training. And they have figured out the things that we're talking about, which it appears they have. They've addressed these issues. They've done it systematically. This may be an opportunity, because these schools are not going to hire more guards. And you've got a sprawling campus. Nothing's going to change if a shooter comes on that campus. We're waiting for the president to... It looks like he's going to sign the spending bill despite the veto threat. But he's not happy about it, because something happened between last night and this morning when he told Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan that he's on board. I guess one theory was he saw them talking about on TV that there wasn't enough spending for the border wall, and it made him mad. And also he said it doesn't address the DACA folks. So, we'll keep you posted on that. 800-222-5222. Changed my mind. I want to talk to the superintendent who wrote this piece about keeping his school safe and the responsibility of keeping his school safe, and how you can arm teachers. And you can do it in a responsible and safe way that could make a difference. 800-222-5222. Peter Tillman 10 continues after this.
Various countries, we're negotiating very long, very hard, but very quickly. And the deal with South Korea is, according to Secretary Ross and Bob Lighthizer, is very close to being finished. And we're going to have a wonderful deal with a wonderful ally. We're getting very close to it. It was a deal that was causing a lot of problems for our country in terms of employment and in terms of lots of other things. I might ask Secretary Ross to just say a few words about that, and then we're going to get on to this ridiculous situation that took place over the last week. So, Secretary Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. We believe we are relatively close to a pretty comprehensive resolution with the South Korean government. It will encompass, if it goes through, both the 232s and broader trade issues. And we hope by sometime next week to be able to have a real announcement.
Thank you very much, Wilbur. I appreciate it. The last time we negotiated something like this, and as you know, it's always been a problem for our country, they get together and they create a series of documents that nobody's been able to read because it was just done. Now, you tell me who can read that quickly. It takes a long time to read it. For the last 8 years, deep defense cuts have undermined our national security. How old are, and they just, if you look at what's taken out, they've hallowed our readiness as a military unit and put America at really grave risk. My highest duty is to keep America safe. Nothing more important. The omnibus bill reverses this dangerous defense, as crazy as it's been, as difficult as it's been, as much opposition to the military as we've had from the Democrats, and it has been tremendous. I try to explain to them, you know, the military is for Republicans and Democrats and everybody else. It's for everybody. But we have tremendous opposition to creating really what will be the far, by far, the strongest military that we've ever had. We've had that from the Democrats. So if we take something for the military, they want something for, in many cases, things that are really a wasted sum of money. And it's not right, and it's very bad for our country. We're looking to do funding for our final fight in certain areas. As you know, we've gotten just about 100% of our land back from ISIS. We have troop increases necessary to accomplish what we have to do, and we have, very importantly, a pay increase for our troops. And this will be actually the largest pay increase for our incredible people in over a decade. It increases total defense spending by more than $60 billion from last year and funds the addition of critically needed ships, planes, helicopters, tanks, and submarines. We have submarines being built, the likes of which there's nothing anywhere in the world like the submarines we build. Our military equipment is the best equipment in the world. And one of the things you saw 2 days ago with Saudi Arabia and with other countries, Saudi Arabia, as an example, is buying hundreds of billions of dollars worth of our equipment. And we're getting very fast approvals on that. Therefore, as a matter of national security, I've signed this omnibus budget bill. There are a lot of things that I'm unhappy about in this bill. There are a lot of things that we shouldn't have had in this bill, but we were, in a sense, forced, if we want to build our military, we were forced to have. There are some things that we should have in the bill. But I say to Congress, I will never sign another bill like this again. I'm not going to do it again. Nobody read it. It's only hours old. Some people don't even know what it is. $1.3 trillion. It's the second largest ever. President Obama signed one that was actually larger, which I'm sure he wasn't too happy with either. But in this case, it became so big because we need to take care of our military. And because the Democrats, who don't believe in that, added things that they wanted in order to get their votes. We have to get rid of the filibuster rule. We have to get rid of the filibuster rule and go to 51 votes in the Senate if we're going to have really sustained, continued success. DACA recipients have been treated extremely badly by the Democrats. We wanted to include DACA. We wanted to have them in this bill. 800,000 people. And actually, it could even be more. And we wanted to include DACA in this bill. The Democrats would not do it. They would not do it. To prevent the omnibus situation from ever happening again, I'm calling on Congress to give me a line item veto for all government spending bills, and the Senate must end. They must end the filibuster rule and get down to work. We have to get a lot of great legislation approved, and without the filibuster rule, it'll happen just like magic. I want to address the situation on border security, which I call national defense. I call it stopping drugs from pouring across our border, and I call it illegal immigration. It's all of those things. But national defense is a very important two words, because by having a strong border system, including a wall, we are in a position militarily that is very advantageous. And before I get off of that subject, I'd like to ask Secretary Mattis to talk about what we've accomplished in terms of the military, because there has never been anything like we've been able to do. Our military is very depleted, but it's rapidly getting better. And in a short period of time, it will be stronger than it has ever been. So I'd like to ask Secretary Mattis to say a few words, please.
Talk with your 790 KBC. Well, thank you, President, signing the omnibus bill.
In 1790, in George Washington's first annual address to Congress, he stated, to be prepared for war is one of the most effective means of preserving the peace. As the President noted, today we receive the largest military budget in history, reversing many years of decline and unpredictable funding. And together, we are going to make our military stronger than ever. We in the military are humbled and grateful to the American people for their sacrifices on behalf of this funding. Now it's our responsibility in the military to spend every dollar wisely in order to keep the trust and the confidence of the American people and the Congress. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, General. The border we've worked very hard on. We have a lot of, really by any standard a lot, but not by this standard, but we're going to make it go a long way. We have a lot of money coming to the border, and it will be coming over a period of time. We funded the initial down payment of $1.6 billion. We're going to be starting work literally on Monday on not only some new wall, not enough, but we're working on that very quickly, but also fixing existing walls and existing acceptable fences. There are some areas that you have to see through. You have to be able to see through the other side in order to see what's coming. And in many cases, it's not a pretty picture when you look, but you have to be able to see it. So we have $1.6 billion for the wall. That'll start immediately. This is a short-term funding, but it's immediate. Starts immediately. And I'd like to ask Secretary Nielsen to say a few words about what we've done in terms of Homeland Security and what the bill does for Homeland Security. Thank you.
Good afternoon. We at the Department of Homeland Security work very closely with the Department of Defense, and we support this omnibus in the defense of our country. As the President has stated, under his leadership, he has delivered for the American people. This is a down payment on a border wall system. This is a 10% increase for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. This will help us improve our aviation security with some badly needed upgrades, and we look forward to working with Congress on additional needs that we have. I will say, however, that it's unfortunate that Congress chose not to listen to the men and women of DHS and those on the front lines. They told us how to build the wall, where to build the wall, and we will continue to work with them to make sure that the wall is where we need it, how we need it, as the President described, and to make sure that it serves the American people and serves the security of this nation. We also will continue to work with Congress to close the dangerous loopholes that the President has mentioned many times, and to continue to increase our overall security. And finally, we thank those in Congress who support the Department of Homeland Security. I will continue to make myself available to them. I look forward to working with them, but we must fund the department and give it the tools and resources it needs to execute the mission the American people have asked us to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary. So we have many elements in the bill that we wanted. Just to look at a few of them, we're providing $654.6 billion in total discretionary funding for defense. It's a record, all records for defense. There will be nobody that says that our military is going to be depleted, like they've been saying over the last long period of time, frankly, beyond President Obama. That won't be happening. We're spending a lot of money on nuclear, our nuclear systems, to upgrade, and in some cases, brand new, whether it's submarines, nuclear submarines, and others. So we'll have by far the most powerful nuclear force on Earth, and it'll be absolutely in perfect shape and condition, and hopefully, praise be to God, we don't ever have to use it. but there will be nobody that's even close. This will give a substantial increase to people even outside of the military, but military-related. Some of the many things that we're buying in the military, we have $23.8 billion to procure 34 Navy ships. Our Navy is at about the lowest point in terms of ships that it's been in over 100 years. And we're adding a significant number of extremely advanced vessels. $10.2 billion for 90 F-35 aircraft. That's the most sophisticated aircraft in the world, jet fighters. Total stealth. They're hard to find. They're hard to see. Therefore, they're hard to beat. It's very tough to beat a plane when you can't see it. This is the most advanced in the world. $10.2 billion for 90 F-35. We have $2.9 billion for 15 KC-46 tanker aircraft. The tanker aircraft is very important based on everything. It allows our planes to travel anywhere in the world without landing. $1.8 billion for 24 FA-18EF Super Hornet aircraft fighter jets. $1.7 billion for 10 PA, the Poseidons. Incredible stuff. $1.1 billion for 56 UH-60 Black Hawk helicopters, most advanced helicopter in the world by far, fighting machine. $1.1 billion for the upgrade of 85 Abrams tanks. $705 million for the cooperative programs that we're working with Israel and others on various missile defense systems. We're spending a lot of money on missile defense. We have a lot of offense that's been recently installed. We're spending tremendous money on missile defense. You understand what that means, everybody does. With what we have out there, missile defense is very, very important. We are funding our Border Patrol agents and our ICE agents. They are working long hours under tremendously dangerous conditions. We're adding large numbers of immigration judges, high-quality judges. Not only are we adding them in the district court level and the federal level of Court of Appeals, but we're adding immigration judges at a very high level. So, while we're very disappointed in the $1.3 trillion, nobody more disappointed than me because the number is so large, it'll start coming down. We had no choice but to fund our military because we have to have by far the strongest military in the world. And this will be by far the strongest military that we've ever had. So when you look at all of these pages, a lot of that is devoted, a lot, to the military. I just want to thank members of Congress for working so hard. While we can be disappointed in some ways, we have to also know that there are a lot of strings pulling everybody in different directions. The Republican senators, the Republican congressmen and women have been steadfast on their fight for the border and steadfast for their fight on the military. We're also spending $6 billion on, as you know, various forms of drug control, helping people that are addicted. It's a terrible problem, but this will be also, this will be a record. We'll be suing certain drug companies for what they've done with the opioids, and we'll be bringing the suits at a federal level. The level of drugs that are being put out there and the power of this addiction is hard to believe. People go to the hospital for a period of a week and they come out, they're drug addicts. There has to be a better way. Doctors are way down now in their orders of the opioids, way down. That's a great thing. We're also looking for, in our research funds, we're looking for a medicine that can stop the pain without the addiction so that people aren't going to become addicted to these incredible drugs. So that's part of what we have. We're going to have $6 billion in having to do with opioids and other problems that this country and, in fact, the world is having with drugs. So we're extremely proud of what we've been able to do when it comes to our military. Our military will be far superior than to any military anywhere in the world. That's very important for us. You see the players out there. You see what we're dealing with. We are very happy with what's happened with opioids. We're very happy with what's happened with certain elements of the border. Not happy with $1.6 billion, but it does start the wall, and we will make that $1.6 billion go very, very far. It's going to go very far. I can tell you this, and I say this to DACA recipients, that the Republicans are with you. They want to get your situation taken care of. The Democrats fought us. They just fought every single inch of the way. They did not want DACA in this bill. And as you know, DACA is also tied to the wall for the major funding, the $25 billion for wall and other things. So I think that'll be coming up very soon. But I do want the Hispanic community to know and DACA recipients to know that Republicans are much more on your side than the Democrats who are using you for their own purposes. With that being said, I just want to thank everybody for being here. We're very proud of many of the items that we've been able to get. We're very disappointed that in order to fund the military, we had to give up things where we consider, in many cases, them to be bad or them to be a waste of money. But that's the way, unfortunately, right now the system works. But we have a great country. We are going to have the greatest military we've ever had. And lots of good things are happening. The trade situation we'll be talking about next week. We have many trade deals, not only the deal being made on South Korea, which looks like it's very close to being finalized, but many other countries are now negotiating fair trade deals with us. So we'll be rolling them out as you see them. And part of the reason, frankly, that we're able to do that is the fact that we have the tariffs on steel and the tariffs on aluminum, because it showed how unfair some of these trade deals that have been in existence for many years, how unfair they've been. So it'll be great for our country, and frankly, it'll also be great for other countries. And it will be fair, and it will be reciprocal. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mr. President,
thank
you. Why did you know the credit? You had to sign the bill.
Well, you'll figure it out in about 20 minutes after you look at it. Okay? We're going to figure it out. You're going to figure that out. We looked at it, veto. I looked very seriously at the veto. I was thinking about doing the veto. But because of the incredible gains that we've been able to make for the military, that overrode any of our thinking.
How concerned are you about the impact of the tariffs on the stock market?
Well, I think the stock market's going to be great. I mean, look, the stock market's way up. When I came into office, the stock market was from a different planet. It's way up. China is going to end up treating us fairly. For many years, they had free rein. They don't have free rein anymore. We're very friendly with China. We have great relationships with China. And look, it's time. It's time. Last year, we lost $500 billion on trade with China. We can't let that happen. Thank you all very much.
All right, Talk Radio 790 KBC. Fascinating. Obviously, he was there to sign the spending bill, the omnibus bill, and also to distance himself, saying, not my bill. $1.3 trillion is despicable. Nobody read it. But I needed to do it for national security. We can get your response to that, 800-222-5222. We can go over some of the specifics of it, too, when Peter Tilden 10 continues right after this. Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tillman at 10 continues. So I guess the big news is the president signed the bill, but is not happy about it. As he pointed out, no one read it. It's hours old. It's thousands and thousands of pages. If you didn't hear Jack Abramoff yesterday on the show, everybody got something. Everybody who signed that bill got a present. They all, you and you get this, and you get this, and you get this, and you get this, and that's why it's trillion, $1.3 trillion. Some of the winners and losers in there, defense, of course, one big $61 billion increase, and you heard buying lots and lots of equipment. Senator Charles Schumer, kind of a winner in that he had some leverage and he secured a win for his Gateway project, which is a multi-billion-dollar rail construction effort in the New York metro region that looked like it was going to be shut down. Paul Ryan is kind of a winner because he got it through. There's not a government shutdown. The other thing is the House Freedom Caucus and fiscal conservatives, not happy. They ended up voting against the package. They were crazed by how much money is being spent. John Kennedy, as a matter of fact, the guy you see on TV a lot, from Louisiana, said this is an embarrassment to every taxpayer in America. This is a Great Dane-sized whiz down the leg of every taxpayer in America. Susan Collins wanted a deal to stabilize Obamacare. She did not get that. The Dreamers was not, as you heard, was not discussed in this bill, although, remember, a court blocked the administration from ending the program. And gun control, didn't do a ton of gun control. We can go on specifics of that in a little bit. And the president, not happy because he had hoped to win $25 billion to build the wall. Instead, he won $1.6 billion, and he said, "Wall, the fixes and the wall going up starts Monday. They're ready. No grass is growing there." So we'll take your calls, 800-222-5222, based on what you heard. Pretty amazing, the opioid epidemic, how much he's going to spend there, and that they're going to start going after drug companies. That was the first I've heard of that, that there's going to be lawsuits against drug companies, and that they're encouraging them to come up with alternatives to opiates, non-addicting painkillers. They're on the market now, but they have to push more and more of them, and they have to promote them, and doctors have to promote them. General Mattis got up there for about a second. By the way, I didn't know if he got up there for a second, because with all the changes in administration, he just wanted to get in and get out. Although, apparently, he can make himself heard to the president and disagree, and the president takes it, because I guess he respects him. The Homeland Security Secretary, Christian Nielsen, said that Congress didn't listen to us, didn't give us what we wanted. Wilbur Ross was unbelievable. He looks like, I always think I'm looking at Jeff Dunham's Walter when he gets up there. He just got up there briefly and basically said, "We're going to give you more information next week about what was not in the bill." I mean, it was like a 2 second, "Let me get up and let me sit down." But the big deal is, and you should have seen the bill visually, standing sitting next to Trump on the on a stool. The thing is at least bigger, twice the size of my head. No one read it. Nobody knows what's in there. And he was appalled that he had to spend it. He even actually said that President Obama had to spend and sign something similar and was also not happy because you're held. You're held at like gunpoint, having to sign the deal so you don't shut the government down. All right, talk with your 790 KBC 800-222-5222 is the phone number. We'll be right back with your calls. Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tillman at 10 continues. 800-222-5222 is the phone number. You can talk about the president's speech. I'm going to talk to Aaron David Miller, who is the president of New Initiatives and distinguished scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. He's worked for state departments for both Republican and Democratic presidencies. Been asked a lot about what's the difference now with John Bolton getting in there with H.R. McMaster gone. He's so much more of a hawk. What's going to happen with the Iran deal, North Korea deal? We're going to address that issue. We got the news quiz coming up in just a little bit. And I got to talk about the interview yesterday with Anderson Cooper with the former Playboy model Karen McDougal. It was just a stunning thing. He had her on for an hour. It's better than an Ambien. I couldn't believe it. It's about sex, and yet, she was like a human quaalude, and he was like an Ambien. It was unbelievable. And the revelations, we got to talk about the revelations.